Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. Today we will meet Rosie Holt, who is a woman who rose to prominence during lockdown with some exceptional satire that pilloried the shite show that British politics has been in the last while.
The state of British politics at the moment is ridiculous. And I think particularly with Boris Johnson's government, you had a lot of MPs and politicians coming on there. And it literally felt like they were bullshitting everyone. The people, they were blatantly lying or contradicting themselves. And it was so clear that they were defending whatever they'd been told to defend 2 minutes before the interview.
That was Rosie Holt there, who managed to fool quite a lot of people into thinking she was a Tory MP, which is an amazing feat. And we're going to be talking to her in a moment. But before that, I just wanted to mention Gabriel Scally's report, which comes obviously in the wake of Vicky Phelan's death. Scally, of course, is the government appointed investigator into the cervical check controversy. He was speaking this week and he condemned as completely unacceptable a refusal by doctors to treat women because they were members of a cancer support group campaigning for greater patient disclosure. Public health specialist Scally was speaking in his final progress report on the controversy, and he said he'd been told directly by women affected by that controversy that doctors had questioned whether they had any association with the 221 plus group before they considered treating them. "I've been treated like a leper," Dr. Scally quotes one affected woman in his final report. He said it was very remiss that this attitude was still prevalent 4 years after his report condemned how Cervical Check failed to tell women about an audit of past smear test results. Some doctors working for Cervical Check communicated to women and families the findings of an ill-designed audit in ways that were at times obstructive and callous, he said. Social Democrats co-leader Roisin Shortall said she was very concerned about claims that some doctors were refusing to deal with the 221 plus group. She called on the Medical Council, the Medical Professions Regulator and Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly to look into them. And I really hope they are investigated, because no woman who speaks out on these issues should be made to feel bad for doing so. It's really disappointing, and hopefully Stephen Donnelly will look into that. Those women who became activists deserve all our support and, as I say, should not be discriminated against for speaking up and campaigning for greater patient disclosure. Now, we're big fans here on the Women's Podcast of Rosie Holt, who is an actor, comedian, stand-up and writer. And I suppose a lot of us became aware of her on Twitter during the lockdowns with her fantastic send-ups of Tory politics. So good was Rosie at imitating the kind of obfuscating conservative carry-on that many people were fooled into thinking she was a real Tory politician. Well, British politics has clearly been beyond satire for some time, but Rosie made an excellent go of it. She came on the podcast to talk to us about becoming a viral sensation, about her thoughts on Matt Hancock, the former Minister for Health in Britain, who is now eating camel's penis on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. She talked to us about Brexit and all sorts of things. But I began by asking her how she ended up producing those online satirical videos that gave her career such a boost and entertained us all.
Well, it was a sort of gradual shift, because I'd already gone from... So I trained as an actor, and then the thing with acting is it's quite a passive medium in the way that you have to wait for someone to employ you. And the great thing about, and also when you're doing any kind of acting project, you're kind of part of someone else's creative vision, really. And what really appealed to me when I started doing stand-up was that you could do it anytime, anywhere. Well, at least in London, there's so many stand-up nights. So if you had an idea, you could go and test it out on a stage that night. And so I started doing stand-up, And from stand up, I my acting started doing a bit better again. And then I was about to, sorry, I'm giving such a long winded answer to this question. Then I was, before the pandemic, I was about to go on tour with a very silly comedy show. And then the pandemic happened. And so, like a lot of performers, I was sort of at home twiddling my thumbs, not sure what to do with myself. And then I started doing the videos really by accident. Well, not by accident, but I certainly didn't expect them to take off in the way they did. But I was, you know, like everyone, sort of avidly reading about politics online because there wasn't much else to do. And then I posted a video and it went viral, and it kind of went from there.
And you were at home in your, you sort of decamped to your parents' house, is that right?
Yeah, I went back to my parents. Yes.
So were you in your old bedroom? Was that?
Yes. Yes, I was.
And did it feel that sort of sense of, oh my God, a panicking a bit, like the work's dried up, what am I going to do? Was it that sensation?
Oh God, completely. Also, I had a day job that I was kind of coinciding with my acting work. And then I just left my day job because I had the 6 month acting tour. And then we were about to start rehearsals and then the pandemic happened. So I really thought, and then I moved back in with my parents. So I really, it really felt like I was in massive trouble. And then you're sat in your bedroom and my parents have sort of made it into a bit of a shrine of me. You know, they kind of put all the old photos of me in my room. So
that was so interesting.
You do feel like you've regressed quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, during the Partygate scandal at Downing Street, you made a video and it fooled an awful lot of people because you pretended to be this Tory MP and everyone believed you were actually one. Tell us about it.
Yes. So I posted a video about the, well, I think it was this, the second video I did as the Tory MP that really kind of took off in that way. And it was about the Sue Gray report, because obviously you had all these MPs kind of going, oh, well, I can't say if I was at the party until Sue Gray's report comes out. So I was kind of playing with that really and going, well, I can't tell you if I was at the party until Sue Gray tells me if I was at the party. How, you know, if a party happens and no one's there to see it, was there a party? And yeah, people really fell for it, and some quite well revered people and less well revered people, like the ex head of UKIP. But it was very strange. It was very strange.
We're going to hear a little bit of it now, just so people who might not have, but I'm sure everyone listening has heard it.
And I want to ask you about the latest allegations on Christmas parties. Did you attend the Downing Street party that was organised by Martin Reynolds on the 20th of May?
Well, all that, as you know, is subject to an investigation with Sue Gray. So until that report is completed, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know whether I attended the party. It's that age-old question, if a tree falls in a forest but no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, if there was a party in lockdown when we told everyone they couldn't even attend funerals, but no one knew about it, was there a party? And Sue Gray is tasked with answering this philosophical question.
So, like you say, some quite well-known people, I think there was authors and people going mad, thinking that you were real. And this was brilliant because for those of us watching who, I don't know, I obviously knew that it wasn't a real Tory MP, but people, it shows the state of British politics, doesn't it, at that time, that people yeah. were so able to just buy into that.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think it's two things. I think on one hand, I think people on social media like to get angry, so they might see something and react to it quite quickly and not check the person or look into it a bit deeper. But then I also think, to be fair on anyone who's fallen for it, is that the state of British politics at the moment is ridiculous. And I think particularly with Boris Johnson's government, you had a lot of MPs and politicians coming on there, and it literally felt like they were bullshitting everyone. The people, they were blatantly lying or contradicting themselves. And it was so clear that they were defending whatever they'd been told to defend 2 minutes before the interview. I think it made a lot of people, myself included, a bit angry, but it was also quite funny, I felt, as a comedian. And that's kind of what I wanted to play with.
Yeah. I mean, your thing is all about when things are really dark and bad, that laughing at them sort of makes things better.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that's always what I've done in my private life as well. When something really bad happens, I kind of think, What's an entertaining way I can relay this to someone?
So you've had that experience during lockdown of having a weird sort of success that kind of elevated you to a level you weren't at before. How did you navigate that? And was that a great feeling that something you did in your old bedroom, in your old house, had kind of got you into really noticed, I suppose. Your name became well known. I mean, I was tweeting you all the time and saying, oh my God, you're amazing. And lots of friends were texting me about you and stuff like that. So.
Oh, no, thank you. It was a mixed bag. It was really great. I mean, because also you're always wanting as a comic or as an actor really to get your work recognised. So in that way, it was great. It was also quite strange because it started happening over lockdown where you weren't seeing anyone really, other than sort of some old people of Somerset that I'd pass, you know, in the daily walk near my parents' house. And then, so it was weird suddenly coming back to London and getting recognised in the street, and that was quite nice. But then I think also there is, I'm not saying anything new here, but there is sort of less pleasant aspects to social media, and I think the first time I fell foul of a pile-on, which for anyone who doesn't know is just when hundreds of people are sort of tweeting abuse at you.
We're very familiar with pylons here on the Women's Podcast. Yeah,
but that was really alarming. And also I think it was because the way people were talking to me was as if I was sort of a celebrity who should know better and should be held to account. And I found that that made me feel a bit sick, really. So in that way, it was a bit of a bumpy road in some ways, but on the whole, it's great, and I'm really grateful for it. Though I am worried that Twitter is now falling apart because of Elon Musk.
Yes,
but we'll see.
We'll see what happens. But it has been like an insanely turbulent time in British politics. I mean, yeah. Boris resigning, Liz Truss and the lettuce, like 45 days, and the British economy, the cost of living crisis. But do you feel like for a comedian, for someone like you, it's good times really, isn't it? To have all that material to work with.
Isn't it bad? It's terrible. It's kind of looking at the damage that politics does on everyone and going, oh, well, at least this gives me something to talk about. It's one of those weird things where you want the country to get better, but you also think if the country gets better, what happens to my career? Does it get worse?
Now, we have to talk about Matt Hancock.
Oh, yeah, the national treasure, Matt Hancock.
Yes, apparently. I mean, I am just appalled watching it, I have to say. Like, it started off good. Boy George was getting very narky with him on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yeah.
You know, there were certain people, like the woman from Loose Women, Charlene, she was giving him grillings. Then very quickly, they started to all go, oh, you know, he's really nice, Matt, and all that. And it's driving me insane. What's your take on, I suppose, first of all, him doing it in the first place? So outrageous when he should be, you know, being an MP, and he just goes off to that. And then also how the thing has developed. Yeah, I'm just interested in your take.
It's interesting, isn't it? I've been watching it with my flatmate and we've been glued to it. So I kind of have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I think, yes, it's appalling that he's kind of gone in, but not just because he's going on I'm a Celebrity. In the same way that I think really Boris should be suspended. Boris is on holiday the whole time. He came back because he thought he might be leader again, and then he swanned off again. And you think, well, if you're going to take the whip away from Matt Hancock, you should really be taking the whip away from Boris Johnson as well. So I think that kind of asks some questions. Also, it's slightly unnerving, this idea of rehabilitating disgraced politicians through reality TV. And I don't know what that says about our society, but I don't think it's very good.
No.
On a personal level, I always get in trouble when I say this, but I've always had a slight soft spot for Matt Hancock. I'm gonna back up what I'm gonna say because everyone always gets alarmed. But for the record, I think he's done a lot of damage to the country, and there's, you know, when he was health secretary, there's a lot of things there that should bear some quite serious scrutiny. But I always found him so socially awkward. I couldn't really hate him. So during the pandemic, I felt like he kept getting wheeled forward by the Tories as a sort of media punching bag, where he'd have to sort of defend all these indefensible things, and he'd look so sad about it. And so I always had trouble hating him. And so for that reason, I can kind of see why the campmates have quickly thawed towards him. But that said, sorry, I keep just contradicting myself.
Rosie,
here.
You do. And I really have to bring your attention to that CCTV footage of Matt Hancock snogging Oliver Bonus's wife, is the way I do.
But
think
it's
of him
nice
all the time.
To have their, it's passion and love.
No, but I'd say his wife wasn't very happy.
No, I'm joking. I don't really think okay. that.
And his children. I mean, I feel like it's appalling that they're having to look at him, you know, trying to rehabilitate himself on reality TV, the yeah. whole thing. Sorry, I'm getting very serious here. I know you're very fond of him, but I can't stand
no,
him.
I'm not fond of him. I just have a soft spot for him because he's so socially awkward. But and all I mean by that, I'm not voting for him. But I mean, I can see why they've thawed to him, because I think if you're actually dealing with a person one-on-one, of course you're going to start dealing with sort of reacting to them on a personal level. And on a personal level, he's this quite sort of awkward, strange man. But yeah, if I'm looking at the bigger picture, yeah, of course I don't think he should be in there. And I think it's awful for his wife. And well, I don't know, but I suspect it is. And it's kind of bizarre that he's gone in there anyway. So It's weird because it's the same reason why I'd never want to meet a politician that I satirise. I'm worried that on a personal level I go, oh, you're quite nice. You're a bit socially awkward. I like socially awkward people. I warm to them. So that's what I mean by that. I don't mean that I'm like giving him a pass.
No, I let you away then. I think I understand you more now. But I mean, the thing is, they have warmed to him, and that's a fact. People even in there who really were very annoyed that he was there have come round completely. And he's, I mean, everyone was voting for him to do the horrible tasks at the beginning, yeah. but now he's not getting voted, and now he's not getting voted out.
No, he's not
either.
Getting voted out.
No.
I know, and it's weird, isn't it? So he kind of went in there because he says he went in there because he wanted people to see the human face behind the politician. But, and you know, yes, that's, I think he's successfully done that. But the problem is you kind of ask, yes, but why do you need to do that? So, for example, if, I don't know, you have a horrible boss who is responsible for kind of gross negligence and isn't treating the staff very well. And then you sit with him in a therapy session and you find out, and he's like, oh, actually, I'm having real troubles at home with my wife and whatever. Yes, on a personal level, you're going to feel sorry for him. You might understand him. But also, that shouldn't have anything to do with it. And I think that's the main problem is, yes, okay, you're showing us the personal face behind a politician, but why do we need to see that? What are you trying to do with it? Are you trying to sort of leverage it from the fact that you've made some quite serious mistakes? That's, for me, why it's kind of bad.
Do you think he's going to redeem himself, or does it really matter? Is it a moment in time, a reality TV show, and then once he's out, it kind of goes back to him being Matt Hancock again? Or can these things change a perception for good of somebody, do you think?
I have no idea. I think he's clearly I can't believe that he's gone in there to strengthen his political career. I just don't see how anyone's going to take him seriously after this. And that makes me think, oh, you trying to sort of make yourself into a kind of lovable ex-politician like Ed Balls, or even hardly lovable, but Anne Widdecombe. And if that's the case, it's just a bit disgusting, isn't it? It's so disgusting. I mean, why are you doing that? I don't want our politicians, especially when they do something wrong, to suddenly go through the reality TV mill and come out as sort of beloved celebrities who then present shows and go on, go on all the other ones, like sort of Strictly and the brief one where they went on a farm, Celebrity Farm. I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah, that wasn't good. I have to say, watching all of this from Ireland, I mean, we give out about our politicians as well, but lately, looking at Britain, we're kind of looking at our politicians going, oh my God, they're amazing. They're the most brilliant people ever, you know? Do you keep an eye on Irish politics at all? I know you have an Irish flatmate.
Yeah, I've got an Irish flatmate. And so I, a little bit, but not much. I kind of it's interesting you say that, like, because I feel the whole world is doing that at the moment. I think what's been embarrassing is for so long as England, I think we had a bit of a smugness because we felt, okay, people look at us and they think we're sensible.
A bit of a smugness, Rosie. Sorry, I'm
just a little smugness. Just a little British smugness. And that's gone. We can't be smug anymore because everyone, we're a laughing stock. We completely, you know, we've done stupid decision after stupid decision, starting with Brexit. And yeah, we're a mess.
And Rishi's just not able to admit that Brexit has really messed everything up. I mean, it's just this kind of weird thing in the Tory party where no one's allowed to actually tell the truth. And it's the big elephant in the room of every conversation about the economy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think Rishi's interesting because I think on one level, he, after Liz Truss, he seems incredibly competent. And I think in lots of ways he is. But he's also very right wing. And he is someone, as you point out, as a sort of staunch Brexiteer. And I do think it's amazing the way they're resolutely, these Brexiteers, saying, yeah, we're all about getting Brexit done. Brexit is great. When Brexit has done nothing but do economic damage and damage in other ways, like, you know, threaten relations.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With Ireland for starters, but with lots of countries. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes.
Yeah, it will be interesting. With this success and with your profile getting raised, you put it together a show that you toured in and you went brought to Edinburgh called Woman's Hour. So tell us about all the characters that you brought together in that, including Harriet, I think, was in that one.
Yeah, it was all about how great Matt Hancock was. No, it wasn't really. it was a love letter to Matt Hancock. It was a variety of different characters, and I basically wanted to take up all the different voices that make up our current political discourse. So I had my MP character, also this character, Harriet Langley Swindon, which is the character that kind of first went viral, who's basically one of these strong right-wing opinionists that you see on so many kind of right-wing channels. And I've got a podcast with her called Non-Censored. I say with her, I mean, I play her. but it's basically a parody of these talk shows where we have various guests and I interrogate them. But so I had those two, and then I had other various characters. So I had a Kirsty Allsop type character and a conspiracy theorist and all sorts. And it was really fun. But I'm taking it on tour, actually.
Are you coming to Dublin by any chance?
I don't think I am coming to Dublin.
Because your flatmate's from Meath.
Yeah, I should go to Meath. I'm previewing in Belfast.
Oh, I mean, I might get a train up to Belfast to see you, Rosie. I'm a big fan.
I do. It'd be really fun. I mean, I've got quite a lot of work to do on it because the problem is, I think we're doing any kind of political comedy. The politics has changed so much in the past few months that my show's completely not relevant now. It feels like a relic. It feels like a historical relic. And even when I was writing it, I thought, okay, I was writing about the leadership race, but I was thinking, you know, I had a pretty good idea that probably Liz Truss was going to end up prime minister. And I'd geared up enough of my material that if that happened, I could, you know, I'd only have to make a few tweaks to the show. And then, of course, Liz Truss didn't last very long at all. And I thought, oh, okay, right, no, now I'm going to have to completely change the show. Right.
So, yeah, that was interesting.
I'm thinking about your mum and dad in Somerset. What have they made of all of this? Are they proud of you? Or are they going, oh my God, I don't know what Rosie's up to? Or what do they think?
No, they're very proud, which is really sweet. I think they're always quite impressed with anything that seems a bit showbiz. So if someone famous tweets me, they get really excited.
Now, I have to ask you the obligatory women in comedy question, Rosie, because it's something, I suppose, still quite a male-dominated area. So for me as well, that's why it was wonderful to see you, because there's a lot of guys doing various things. And you were, I think, the big one in lockdown. Do you find it difficult? Is it something that you think of at all? Or is it just get on with it and gender doesn't matter? Or what way do you land with it?
I don't think about it too much, but I think it's, of course, it's different for women in comedy. And I think sometimes the ways where it affects you is quite insidious. I think, for example, certainly I found when I was doing stand-up that often I would go on stage and you just have to win the audience over a lot more to begin with. So if you go on for a man, I think the audience relaxes. They go, okay, this person's going to make us laugh. We're fine. Where actually, if you go on stage as a woman, the audience are quite tense. They're going, oh God, it's a woman. Is she going to be funny?
So I just want to interject there, because I have the opposite feeling about comedians. And maybe, I don't know if that's me as a woman, but often I'll just go, oh, this is a man. He's not going to make me laugh. Whereas if a woman comes on, I just feel like I'm a lot more kind of confidence, because I feel like she's had to work harder or something to even get to that point. I mean, maybe that's, I don't know.
No, I think that's really good, but I think you're sadly a minority. I mean, I've had women, you know, come up to me, and every female comedian has had this, where a woman comes up to you in the loo afterwards and they go, oh, I thought you were really funny. I don't usually find women funny. And you go, oh, what other female comedians have you seen? And they can't really name. I can't name any. And you go, am I just the first woman comic that I've seen? So there's that. I think as far as internet comedy, it's great because you can kind of put things out there and you're not, you obviously don't have that problem. But there are other things that you, of course, get misogyny in the comments thrown at you. And that's something that I don't think a male comic has ever received an aggressive dick pic, which I have. You know, you're not funny, bitch, and then a picture of their penis.
An aggressive dick pic.
Yeah, aggressive. Yeah. It's not a friendly dick pic. It's not like, hey, here's my penis. It's, you're not funny. Also, here's my penis.
Oh, I'm sorry you're getting that. And we shouldn't really laugh because it is horrific. But it's just something that you have to contend with, I suppose. And just.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I think the thing is a lot of comedy on TV, a lot of panel shows, they're quite male, really. The idea of it is quite male, of kind of sort of trying to out-joke each other and things like that. So I think for women it's difficult because you are still navigating quite a male system. So I think that there are lots of ways that it affects you, but you don't necessarily think about it all the time. Well, you try not to, because you don't really want to go in going, I'm a woman and I do comedy.
No, you do not want to do that. Now, listen, how do you capitalize on something like this? Or is there pressure to? Is it like, oh my God, I'm gone viral now. Lots of people know me. How do I write a book? Do I do this? Do you get people coming in at you saying, oh, I want to be your agent. I want to represent you. Have you dealt with all that well? Or how are you finding all of that attention?
So, I mean, I already had an agent, which was great. I think if I hadn't, because I know some people when they kind of go viral online, they don't have any of those kind of things. And then I think sometimes they're thrown into things that they're not ready for. And I'm lucky in that I've been slaving away acting comedy for quite a while. So at least, you know, at least when I did a stage show, I already had the sort of basic training on both acting and doing stand up to kind of be able to do that. But yeah, it is quite overwhelming. And I think the thing I find is, because you do get people going, you know, do you want to write a book? And you have meetings with sort of TV people who are going, hey, do you want to do a TV show? And you go, great. And they go, what do you want to do? And you go, oh, oh, I was hoping you just put me in something. So it's sort of, it's great. But I think for me, there's the anxiety where you go, oh, I've got to keep, I'm getting lots of doors open for me now, but I still need to be the one that
that sort of puts myself through them and comes up with an idea and writes this and writes that, which obviously is amazing and I'm not complaining. But it's one of those things where sometimes you do get, I have moments where I get very anxious, where I go, God, what if this, I'd have killed for these opportunities 5 years ago. And now I've got them. Ah, what if I mess them up? I just...
Well, look, tell us what you are doing now, because you said you're going on tour. So A Woman's Hour is the name of the show.
Yeah, The Woman's Hour. And
have they minded you nicking the name of their flagship BBC Radio 4 programme?
I don't know. I haven't asked them.
Have you been on Woman's Hour yet?
Do you know what? No, but I was going to. They had me down to go on, and I can't remember why they didn't. I think some big news thing happened and I got bumped, but I was going to. But yeah, so I'm taking the Women's Hour on tour, which is I'm really excited about, and I'm taking that on tour in March. We haven't made an announcement about it yet, but I think we are in like a day or two. I think it's going to happen. When this comes out, it might even have happened. I can't say. So yeah, that's the big thing. So at the moment I'm sort of gigging and trying to sort of prepare for that. I also have this podcast, Non-Censored, which we release every week, which is a topical podcast. And it's really poking fun of the right-wing coverage of British politics. And that's a lot of fun. And then I've kind of got lots of other sort of projects that may or may not happen, which I'm waiting to hear about.
And you're out of Somerset now. You're back in London.
I'm back in London, yeah.
In your grown-up pad.
My grown-up pad. Yes, it's nice.
And
it's nice,
before, apart from no before you go, meals. Rosie, tell us what you think of Boris and how your feelings about him as a person in British politics.
I have a real soft... I don't have a soft spot with Boris, I'm joking.
I was going to have to just kick you out of the Zoom there if you're going to say that.
No, I think Boris Johnson. Awful man. I hate the way, really, you know, as someone who I felt he got in as this kind of charming, I make these jokes. And actually, I think he's quite a nasty human being. The way he conducted himself over the pandemic showed a lot of contempt for the British public, and I think he did a lot of damage to the political system just in the fact that he would blatantly lie about things and get away with it. I don't think he's like Trump, but I think that was quite Trumpian, the idea that actually, oh, you can say something and worry about whether it's true later, and that doesn't matter. And I think that did a lot of damage, because I think previous to that, there was at least some semblance of trying to appear like politicians were being honest. And now that's gone out of the window. And I think it's also led to a lot of distrust of politicians. I mean, I certainly do. But I remember throughout the pandemic just sort of watching him and other politicians and thinking, oh, wow, you think we're all stupid. You think we're all stupid. Also, there's a brilliant book called Failures of State. I think it's called Failures of State. And it's about the handling of the pandemic in this country. And it's so damning. It's so damning of Boris Johnson and that whole government. And it's really, really shocking. And you do read it and you think, a lot of people died that didn't need to. And for that, I really hope that the COVID inquiry that seems to have really been pushed back and back and back, he does sort of show him up, and he has to answer for it, I hope.
Well said. Do you ever get any feedback from the Tories themselves? Has anybody from that side of the world told you they like what you do or gets it, or do they all hate you, Rosie?
It's a good question. I don't know. I was asked to speak at this thing, and I did meet some sort of behind the scenes Tories, I'm trying to remember now. They seemed quite excited by me, actually. But as for the actual MPs themselves, I don't know. I mean, I feel they must know who I think they must know who I am, mustn't they? But I don't know how they feel about it.
Well, I hope you keep doing what you're doing. It's really important service, I think. And even though you have a soft spot for Matt Hancock, I'll let you
know. I shouldn't have admitted that. In fact,
no,
even as I said it, I thought, why am I doing this? Because I, whenever I've said it to friends, they go, they're so appalled. And then I have to do a bit like I did to you. I have to go on this really long-winded thing where I'm going, no, no, look, I'm just saying if I met him personally, I think he was, you know, I just warmed him, but I don't think he's good.
Well, he could end up winning this whole thing. You never know. Weird things happen.
I will be really upset if he wins. I can categorically say that. Whatever soft spot I have for Matt Hancock, I don't want him to win. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. I think that would be abysmal and I'd lose all faith in the British public.
Okay, well, I'm glad you've clarified your position, Rosie Holt, MP.
Maybe just cut the bit where I talk about my soft spot.
No, just cut it.
I don't want any more abuse online.
Thank you so much, Rosie, for coming on and keep on with your brilliant work. Keep entertaining us and well done on all your success.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was Rosie Holt there. Her tour is called Woman's Hour and she's definitely worth a jaunt up to Belfast when that tour kicks off in March. That's all we have time for. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, and by Suzanne Brennan with JJ Vernon on sound. Get in touch with us on email, thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com, or on social at IT Women's Podcast. Mind yourselves and I'll talk to you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.